Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber. Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the host of the Home Improvement Show, Rich Orris, on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
All right, everybody, good Saturday morning, and welcome to the KMOX Home Improvement Show, sponsored by my work, Mosby Building Arts, Scott Mosby, your trusted source for expert advice and home maintenance right here, everything remodeling and everything in between all of that. We can handle it right here today. I'm Rich Orris, and for the next 2 hours, we'll be talking about how to keep up your home, how to keep it in tip-top shape. Maybe avoiding costly mistakes is a big thing you got to watch out for, and how to make some smart upgrades that will add some value and some comfort to your space in your home, whatever you're looking for, whether you're dealing with a plumbing leak, some drafty windows, foundation concerns are a big thing, or possibly planning a major renovation. I'm here for you to help. No question, too big or small. And maybe if you're wondering if it's time to replace that old roof, how to tackle a kitchen remodel, what kind of maintenance steps should you take before spring, summer rolls in, whatever's on your mind, we've got you covered right here today. And the best part of this show is that it is all about you. Everything you want, everything you need. I want to hear from our listeners. You can give me a call, 314-436-7900, and we can discuss and talk about your home, your projects, your concerns. Maybe you need some pro tips or just want a second opinion before making a big decision. That's kind of what we can help. And the greatest thing is some good free expert advice right here. It's absolutely free. So grab yourself your favorite drink, cup of coffee, get comfy, find a good spot, and let's dive into all things home improvement today right here with me, Rich Orris, on KMOX. You can find me again. Remember, 314-436-7900. So don't wait. Let's get to work together. And I do want to kind of let everybody know, you probably heard, a lot of Cardinals fans out there, we're going to be cutting out after the first hour from KMOX for the Cardinals game. So go Cardinals. We're hoping they're going to have a great preseason and get into a great season this year and maybe improve. But so we do have another full hour after that. So if you're sticking around, Cards fan, wonderful. If you want to hear more home improvement for that second hour, you can jump over to 97.1 FM for that hour, finish out the Home Improvement Show with me, and then jump back and catch the rest of the Cardinals right after that. So you can still find me in the second hour of the Home Improvement Show today. And get some interesting things I kind of looked up and thought about. And one of the things I try and do as often as I can is just kind of recoup, retouch on some of the questions and the concerns and the topics that we get into and talk about often here on the show. And I do this during the week, so I'm talking about these things often all week long with different clients, different concerns, different remodeling projects they're having me come out and take a look at for their home, and they want to know good ways to do things and the best ways to do things and how we can really help them out. So one of the items we talk about quite a bit here is caulking, shower caulk. We've had a lot of conversations on how to learn how to do that, the best ways to do that, and we haven't touched a whole lot on when you're taking that caulk out in your shower, in the corners, along the tub, along the shower floor. What's kind of the best way to try and remove that caulk from that shower? And really, a flat razor scraper is tool one for getting that out of there. But as you're doing that, and you can do this a couple of times, if you spray this down with some WD-40, spray a little WD-40 on there to help kind of loosen that caulk and help it get in there. And it really helps you just kind of pull that silicone away. So spray some WD-40 on there. Use that flat razor scraper as you're kind of going down the shower floor or the tub floor, and then vertically kind of along the wall. Once you get the first part out, you can spray it again. Let that sit each time for 15 to 30 minutes. So once you get the main part of the caulk out and you got that some of that silicone residue still on the wall or still on the tub surface, spray it real quick, let it sit for 15 to 30 minutes, and then do it again. Go back to that scraper and get that caulk out of there. So, and they do make, they do sell products for this, caulk removers, Goo Gone, Crud Cutter, I believe is what. So most of them cost around $10, and most of us actually already have some WD-40 in our garage, probably sitting on a workbench or something like that. So it doesn't take a lot, very easy to do, and it's something that you always have around the house usually. So after you do that, you really want to make sure you let that dry, clean that surface really, really good with some rubbing alcohol, moistened cloth, and then let that sit, let that dry. Typically, when I caulk my shower, what I try and do is clean everything out, do that kind of towards the evening, and then don't caulk that shower till the following morning. Let that sit, dry out overnight, make sure it's real good, and then you come back and you can apply that new caulking when it's good and dry, get it filled in there real nice, and then let that sit for another 12, 24 hours. Then the next morning, afternoon, you can start considering showering again. So there's kind of some tips on easy ways to try and get that silicone out and get that in there well and really work out. So another thing I'd kind of thought about was when you're going around your house, this is a real simple, quick, kind of easy one that if you're hanging pictures, you're hanging things around the house, a coat hanger on the wall, especially when you get into things that have a little bit of weight to them, and you're using a drywall anchor, like a screw anchor, something that can hold good weight. When you figure out where that's going to sit and you drill into that drywall, or you use one of the self-tapping, self-drilling mounting brackets, there's always all that drywall dust that comes out with the drill, falls to the floor, gets on the top of the base, it gets on the floor. So easy way to handle that is to just take a small baggie, sandwich baggie works real good, or a brown paper lunch bag. Get a little piece of painter's tape, put that on one side of the bag, tape that to the wall directly underneath where you're going to drill or where that bracket's going to go in. Get your work done, get it in there, peel that off. If you have multiple ones, you can just peel it off, go to the next one. So if you're putting in 2, 3, 4, just go down the row, and then all that drywall dust is just dropping right there in that baggie, collecting for you, keeping everything clean as you go through and do your work. So easy way to do it. And for me, I always like to use one of my favorite anchors is the Easy Anchor, those nylon self-drilling drywall anchors. And they have nylon ones that actually work all the way up to like 75 pounds. You can hang some pretty heavy stuff off of these, just off of the drywall. So, and they have some that go even more weight than that, but you'll get into some metal ones and different types. They have one that goes to 100 pounds, but I believe it's a metal one that works. So a little bit different, kind of a toggle system, but you can hang some pretty heavy things. And now you know how to collect some dust and keep it clean and not have to worry about cleaning up as much off your floors and everything else and trying to do this work for you. So, hey, we're going to jump into our first break. Don't forget, right here, everything's about you. You can give me a call right here today, 314-436-7900. Let's see if we can get these phone lines going in the next segment. We'll have more to come. Home Improvement Show right after this. All right, everybody, don't forget, I'm here for you. Anything you need to talk about, any questions about your home, maintenance, remodeling, any kind of needs, we've got the advice for you right here today, 314-436-7900. Finds me, get you in here right away. We've got Frank on the line. Let's jump on here with Frank and see what's going on. Frank, are you there? Can you hear me, Frank? There you are.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for calling. What's going on?
Well, here's the thing. I have a garage heater that's mounted to the wall, and I've got one that's supposedly going to be a little more powerful, but it's a hanging mount, and I thought you would have to probably hang that and find your joists. And you started talking about drywall and the screws this morning. And I thought, how much weight can a drywall, a ceiling, you know, that's drywalled. I don't know the thickness of it. I don't know what the standard would be. But my fear would be if you put those in and you hung that. Now, it's about 2x2. I don't believe it's that heavy, but wouldn't the drywall just break through?
Well, so the two things that you do have to be concerned about is, yes, one, how well is the drywall mounted? Is it screwed, nailed good, glued? The drywall, when you're on a drywall anchor, you do need the drywall to be mounted well. And when you're on a ceiling, it is a completely different strategy now, because the weight of that, what that anchor will hold, if you think about it, when you put that into a wall, a vertical wall, the weight it's holding is like a shear weight. It's pulling down on it while it's screwed into a vertical wall. You screw that into a ceiling and you're pulling directly down on the horizontal drywall, that's going to hold much less weight than, so you would, if there's an anchor out there for that, it would have to be called out, because these anchors I was talking about are for walls that are up and down vertical from the floor to the ceiling, and they'll hold the weight on a wall like that. So if you could mount it to a wall then, and you knew it was under that weight, that would be perfect. But hanging from the ceiling, yes, I would always advise either getting some backing behind it or finding those trusses, finding the ceiling joist, locating them, and making sure that you're screwing into that joist, because that is what will really hold the actual weight of it trying to pull completely straight down from the ceiling.
Well, I'm glad I qualified that, because basically that seemed logical to me.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really sure how great these anchors are. And then I was not so concerned about the anchor pulling out. It was the drywall breaking through, you know?
Yes. And that is a concern also, even a little bit with the wall, not as much with the wall, but it depends on what you're mounting to the drywall and what the use is. So they make these anchors, drywall anchors, for grab bars, for like physical grab bars to hold a person up. And you can, it's kind of a three screw deal that is meant for grab bars, and you put this into the drywall. So if you don't have any wall studs to hit where you need it, you can use these drywall anchors. I did that in a bathroom for my father-in-law, and it holds really well, but just to test it out, because I was concerned that no matter how well that holds to the drywall, if it's a poor drywall job, you might pull the sheet of drywall off the wall with a 250-pound person trying to hold themselves up on this grab bar if they're actually falling or something like that. So basically, once I had it all mounted and it seemed real stiff, I held on to that grab bar and I lifted my feet off of the floor onto the wall to make sure it would hold me that way before I said, yep, you should be good to use this, because I was very concerned it would pull the whole sheet of drywall right off the wall.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yep. Yeah. So it depends on what you're trying to do with it. Pictures and coat hangers and things like that is one thing, because it's the sheer weight on the wall. And if your coat hanger fell, it probably wouldn't injure anybody. But a grab bar, I do a lot of testing, and it does work, and it's worked ever since. But you just have to make sure you have that good drywall installation job.
Right.
Yep.
Well, that answers my question, and you're very good at your job here.
Oh.
And I just,
well, that's awesome. I appreciate that.
No, there's no question about it. But anyhow, thank you so much.
You are very welcome. Have a great day, Frank. And let's jump in real quick with Mildred and see what's going on with Mildred. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm concerned because I have to get a roof put on the home. My question to you is, if I need to replace gutters, what are the new standards as far as to going off of the a high pitch roof? What size should be done?
Oh, what yeah, size? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's my question far as for the rain water to fall off. And what are the new standards, I should say?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question, because the new standard is a 6-inch gutter with what they call an oversized downspout. So the downspout is 3 inches by 4 inches. And kind of the history of our weather, our rain, our everything that happens in our gutters, basically in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, there was a lot of 4-inch gutters, and then they turned it into 5-inch, and those 4-inch and then the 5-inch both had a 2-inch by 3-inch downspout to get rid of the water. So now we've gone up from the 5-inch that we've been using since like the late 70s, 80s, 90s, and now we're at a 6-inch because we're constantly trying to handle more and more rain. And I wouldn't be surprised if 20 years from now we're doing a 7 or an 8 or something. They might start getting pretty big. But so the 6-inch is the best way to go nowadays, with that 3x4 oversized downspout to match it.
Do the guttering go in after the roofing job, or do a roofing company do gutters, or not necessarily so?
So a lot of roofing companies will do the gutters, but most of them, they subcontract that work out to a gutter company, which is fine, because then you just get everything done all at once and in one place. But typically there is a delay between roof and getting gutters installed, and depending on the subcontractor and how backed up they are and how well the roofing company tries to schedule things, I've heard a lot of horror stories where people got a new roof, and you're in the order, to answer your question about the order, roof first, then gutters. So they come and they put the roof on and they rip off all the gutters, and then they end up taking 2 or 3 weeks to come back and put gutters on. And that's the only downfall, is you need a good scheduling company to get through that, to where hopefully you're only without gutters for a day or two or three at the most, rather than a week or 2 or 3 weeks.
Thank you so very much. That was really informative.
Oh, no problem. I appreciate it. I appreciate the call. And we're going to get into our middle hour break here. Rose, if you can hang on the line here for a couple minutes in this break, we'll get to you as soon as we return, and we'll have more, hopefully, calls, more information, and more home improvement and question with Rose when we return. All right, everybody, here we go. Rich Orris here today, KMOX Home Improvement Show. Remember, you can find me at 314-436-7900. We got Rose on the line, as promised. Let's go straight there and see what's going on. Can you hear me, Rose?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question. We have aluminum fascia boards, white aluminum fascia boards, and my husband hung Christmas lights, and they kind of got a little droopy. So he went up there and used electrical tape and to secure them to the fascia boards. So we took the Christmas lights down, the tape is gone, but not the residue. And so since this is in the front of our house, I'm wondering if you have any neat tricks to get the residue off without staining the surrounding fascia board where the tape is not.
Yeah, and the age of that will play a lot into that factor, because that white aluminum metal will oxidize over time, and it kind of gets duller and it kind of gets a little bit spotty. And so the older it is, the harder it's going to be to clean that off without seeing a spot. And the thing you may end up against is, if you clean that spot to get the tape residue off, and then you can see the circle, it looks completely different where that spot is, then you just might end up having to clean that entire board all the way down to try and make it all look the same again. And there is a company, there is like a siding cleaning, it's like a soft wash type company that may be able to come out and professionally help you with that, so you don't have to worry about doing the wrong thing. Because if you clean it too harshly, you can't get beyond the, because that is paint, and you can't get beyond that paint, and it's like a raw aluminum underneath there. You start to see that, and then you're just kind of there where you'll be best to replace it.
That's what I was afraid you were going to say.
Yeah. So hopefully, how old is the house, and how long, do you know how long that metal's been up
well,
there?
I know we've lived there 17 years.
Okay.
So, and yep. It was, it was before we were there.
Yeah.
But I knew from my, living with my dad, who was very handy, that those kinds of things stain, and then you're going to see the oil darkening the surface more than the area around it that you didn't touch. So,
yep.
That's what I wanted an expert to tell me. I was remembering that correctly. Do you happen to know the name of that power wash company that we could give a jingle to?
I could look it up. I don't remember the name. I had a client that used them, and it was, I remember that it was something about like a soft wash. Like it's not a real harsh power wash type of washing. So this client of mine had somebody else do some roofing work and some window work, and the siding had gotten dirty, marked up from the work of the company, and they used this like soft wash company because they were asking me if I had ever heard of it, and it was the first time I had ever even heard of it. But they will do like kind of a soft wash, chemical hose, light kind of wash of the siding, and it seemed to work out really well for what they did, but I do not remember the name of the company.
Okay. Well, maybe I can Google soft wash and see what comes
up.
See
what comes around. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be the best option. Then try it and have a failure and then try to replace that fascia board matching the existing fascia board right next to it. So,
yeah.
You know,
yep.
So that's great. Also, just a side note, we had Mosby out doing some bathroom ventilation for us. They did a great job. So hats
good.
Off to you and hats off to Mosby.
Hey, awesome. Awesome. I appreciate that. And, you know, we talk about that ventilation and condensation and the bath fans venting into the attic all the time here on the show. And it's nice to have you say that because we do actually do that type of work very often.
You absolutely did a great job. And it was because of this show, I heard it. So when we experienced the problem ourselves, I said, let's give Mosby a call. And they came out, did a great job very quickly. It was just a win-win situation. So I appreciate that. I appreciate your show. And thank you for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate the kind words. And hey, maybe in our next segment here, I'll kind of go over that bath fan ventilation. We had a question last week about kitchen exhaust ventilation and the CFM. So maybe I can get into some of that type of stuff when we return after this another quick short break here and get that information back out in front of people because it is a good thing to do and it is very good, important information. So stay tuned. Don't touch that dial. We'll have more to come here in just a minute. Oh, man, speaking of gutters and gutter sizes and rain, and I got to say the variety of music here Drew's putting on today is top-notch. I absolutely love it, and that goes really well with the whole what size should my gutters be and how do I handle water and what order do we do this? And I guess what I failed to say, too, talking about the roof and the gutters is so the order of the roof gutters has a couple reasons for doing it that way, too. And number one is you're going to have a lot of ladders and equipment up against these brand new gutters. So if you did your gutters first and then you end up getting the roof, there's the possibility of scratches and ladders up against. They got to do a lot of protections. And as they strip this old roof, all the asphalt pieces and everything is rolling down into the gutters. So another thing would be is if your gutters were new and then you change your roof, I would make sure to maybe yourself, maybe them, maybe hire someone to come out, but you got to clean those gutters out because there will be so much debris inside those gutters from that roofing replacement. And it's nothing that can be helped. It's not like one roofing company is going to not put a lot in there. It's just going to happen because old roof shingles getting stripped off a roof, you're going to have a lot of asphalt pieces coming down and coming into those gutters. So that's another whole kind of reason on get the roof first, gutters second, and then you finish out that job and it looks real nice and not a lot of damage to it. But a good question and conversation and what Rose had brought up about that bath fan, the bathroom ventilation, and the best ways to do this here at Mosby, working with Scott Mosby and our entire team. And when I say our entire team, I mean, I am literally talking about over 100 people. This isn't like 10 people or 5 people or just a couple of us. There is a lot of people, knowledge. If you added up the time of service and experience and knowledge of like 130 or so people in this company, I couldn't even take a guess at how long that would be. It would be hundreds and hundreds of years of knowledge and experience across a very deep bench. So we come up with these ways and these theories, and we investigate and always trying to do the best thing to get the best quality product to protect people. When you have a 10-year workmanship warranty, you don't want to be back in 2 years seeing condensation. So I have a lot of conversations about some simple jobs, like, can you just replace my bath fan and then ventilate it the way that it should be so it goes outside? And then when you think about, well, why could possibly one company cost 2 or 4 or 5 or 6 times what someone else might say that they're doing the same thing, where they're saying, yeah, I'll replace your bath fan, your exhaust fan, and I'll put a pipe that moves that air to the outside. Well, if that project that they're doing is buying a builder grade Brone bath fan for $40, and it's not even big enough to really get the moisture out of the size of that room, and then they take a flexible pipe, they hook it to the fan, and they run it across the top of the insulation, and they drop it by your soffit at the end of your roof, and they lay it there, and they go, okay, you got a pipe going towards the outside, and you got a new fan. Well, that's going to be a much, much different product and experience and cost in what just happened, because there's not much there. So when I come in and say, okay, well, here's the real deal. Your bath fan needs to be much bigger for a bathroom this size. So we're talking like 100 CFM. We'll get a Panasonic fan that has like a one sewn kind of, it's such a quiet, soft blowing fan that works so well. It's not loud, it's not obnoxious. And then we can consider what turns this fan on and off. So we put in a timer switch on the wall so that you can hit it and it'll run, and then it'll shut off like 30 minutes after you have left the room and gone to work, and it removes more moisture that way. Or we can get a fan. It'll cost a little more, but it actually has a motion sensor in it, and you can set that time to say run for 30 minutes after you sense motion. So every time you walk in the room, it just runs, it just works, and then it'll run for 30 minutes after. So now I go in the attic, and I don't use a flexible pipe. I use a hard pipe, an actual galvanized pipe. I run that through the roof with a damper on top of the roof, flashed into the shingles. Inside that pipe, I put a backdraft damper, and then around that pipe, I put insulation, like a sleeve around it, to protect it from the cold temperatures of the attic, because you're going to have some really warm, hot air coming out of there and through that pipe into a very cold attic in the winter, and that's where your condensation and your water stains and all that stuff happens. So it is you can imagine that might be 5 or 6 times the cost, because it's 5 or 6 times the work and the effort in what we do to get out of there and protect that for a very long time, so that you can remain in your home and be protective for a super long time. And that is probably a similar scenario that, you know, we perform for Rose there in getting her bathroom ventilation taken care of and everything. So I think we're about to get out of here right now. We're going to cut to Cardinals for all you Cardinals fans, but don't forget, everybody else, jump over to 97.1 in the next hour and catch the next hour of the Home Improvement Show. If you like to, then come on back. We'll be back in the next hour. All right, everybody. We are back. Rich Orris here, host of your home improvement show. Plenty of home improvement conversations, topics, stories, everything we can go over. We got plenty going on today. Again, for you, this is all about you. It's all about the listener. It's about your home. It's about your concerns. It's about the things happening for you. I'd love to help you out. Feel free to give me a call. We've got a whole nother hour lined up right now to the top of the hour. So 314-436-7900 finds me right here today. Any questions you have about your house. And we had a really good first hour. We had some great questions and conversations. And we've gone over a few different things about cleaning some siding and aluminum metal fascia material. And we've talked about roofing and gutters and the sizes and the order, how you do them and why you would do them a certain way in a certain order. And we talked a lot about some wall anchors, how to mount things, how to hang pictures and coat hangers. And we talked with Frank about trying to mount something to the ceiling of his garage from the drywall. And so we've gone over quite a bit. We had a really good conversation about in a topic about a bath ventilation, bath fan, getting moisture out of the bathroom, what happens to it and what should you do once it's in your attic? How do you get rid of it? Where should the air go? So there's a lot to do with ventilation inside, around, all about your house, and ventilation is everywhere in your home. So it's a big topic of how to ventilate the attic properly, how to get the moisture and the warm air from your bathroom to the outside. We've had conversations about the kitchen exhaust and the size of that and having too many CFMs and what that could potentially do to a home. Another big ventilation topic for everybody is, and it's another one that's typically, it's often ignored, is the dryer vent. What should you be doing with your dryer vent? How often should you consider cleaning out your dryer vent? It's definitely something worth seeing, looking into, and making sure that it's not a problem. And the type of material that you use to install that, again, definitely depends a lot on the length of the distance and how far it's going and where is it going to. Is it in an enclosed space? So do you have a finished basement and you've got this dryer vent pipe running 10, 15 feet or more to the outside of the house? How do you keep that clean? How do you check it? There is a lot of importance in making sure that dryer vent line is working and is cleaned out and isn't having any problems. And of course, the reality of it and the very scary part of it is it's a large enough hazard that it can actually cause a fire in the house. And that dryer vent, the lint is extremely, extremely flammable. So you get too much, you get it clogged. And a lot of people just don't think about it, haven't checked it, and don't know. And so then if you do think about it, if you do start to consider this and you do kind of check into it, now you're saying, well, I need to clean this out. I'm seeing a lot of stuff in there. Well, there's some mistakes that are commonly made when cleaning out and maintaining a dryer vent. And of course, I just went over the first most often common mistake is not cleaning it at all or not cleaning it often enough, at least once a year or more, to just look and make sure. This goes way beyond just taking out the lint trap and cleaning that out every load, every other load, making sure that, because a lot gets around that lint trap and through into those pipes. I'm extremely fortunate in my house, in my situation, just because my dryer is, and a lot of dryers are, right up against an exterior wall. So I literally have a pipe behind my dryer that goes about 18 inches and it's out the wall. So it's extremely easy for me to go outside, take off the end of that dryer vent and clean out the louvers and everything and make sure that that pipe is cleaned out. I can physically reach my arm to the end of it and get whatever I need and make sure it's good. So that's easy and fortunate, but not everybody is that way. So when you are cleaning out your dryer vent, it is a good idea to unplug that dryer. Just make sure that it's not going to kick on or anything. A big thing is using the wrong type of equipment, using kind of anything. I've seen people with coat hangers, and they're like, oh, I poked a hole in the side of the pipe because I was just trying to see if I could get a straightened out coat hanger to grab some of this stuff. And that's just so there are tools out there that you can look up and buy. A lot of them cost, you know, $20, $30. Some of them have attachments so it can go longer and kind of brush out the inside of those pipes. There's some that attach to the end of your vacuum cleaner and you can suck a lot of that lint out of there. That's a good way to do it. So using the wrong equipment is a big disaster and could be a big problem. So looking for the right stuff is a great thing to do. But after cleaning, neglecting to really try and look at all that ductwork and make sure that you haven't damaged anything, seeing it, doing everything you can to make sure that it's good, that it's okay, is a mistake that people miss all the time, not checking on what had happened when all that worked. And then, of course, routing the vent into an attic or a crawl space, you really got to, you want to consider the one place that exhaust should be going to maintain that dryer vent safety. It's got to reach the outdoors, but you also have to think of it the same way as that bathroom vent fan. Again, you get into a crawl space where it's getting pretty cold, or if you're in an attic space, you're possibly going to have a lot of condensation and moisture occurring because it's so cold in the winter. And of course, your dryer is definitely blowing hot air. And then if you get it cleaned out, you do all the stuff. Another thing that everyone thinks and a lot of people do is looking at the type of tape, the duct tape. So if you need to repair anything, using actual duct tape on the dryer vent is not the best type of tape to use. And I know that's the name and I know that's kind of what they call out and everything. But that tape does kind of dry out and it will eventually peel off because of the heat and the warm air, and it just won't last as long. So using an aluminum tape that can really clean it, stick that aluminum tape good, that will really hold it. It'll keep the air on the inside and it'll really seal up. So using that aluminum type tape for your ductwork instead of actual duct tape is a big mistake that a lot of people make. So a lot of conversations we can have about ventilation in all the different areas of the home, all the way around. It's a blend. It's everywhere. And it's an important thing to think about. And it plays a lot of factors in a lot of things that happen in our homes, to our homes, and around our homes. So definitely a great conversation to have and to understand as much as you can about it. So, hey, we're going to get into our first break here for this hour. But again, remember, I'm right here. I've got anything you need, anything about your house. Feel free to give me a call. 314-436-7900 finds me right here today. Stay tuned. Don't touch that dial. We'll have more home improvement right after this.
There'll be peace when lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
All right, everybody. We are back. Rich Orris here to serve you today. Home Improvement Show. Anything you need about your house, we've got it covered for you. You have a curious question, you have something you're thinking about doing, want to make sure you're just kind of doing things correctly, right order, just get some advice on it, whatever you need. I'm right here. Got you covered today. 314-436-7900. Direct line right into me. Anything that you need. And if anybody out there that has listened long enough or has met me, knows me, has been around me enough, they know I love to tell stories. I'm definitely a storyteller. I love to go back over, and I feel like it's a great way to explain things that have happened from other people to other people, and also get everyone to kind of think about more things that could possibly be happening from these experiences that I've had, things that I've found looking at homes and projects, and they are, there's a lot of interesting ones, but one of my favorites with the bathroom ventilation was actually, and I always, when I get into this situation and then I figure it out, we go through things, I'm super empathetic to everybody, because a lot of times, a lot of homeowners spend a lot of money on things that aren't exactly what's happening, or it really doesn't correct the problem because it's not the actual fix. It could be something that's happening, but a lot of this is going off of theories and trying to figure things out. And the more you can see and investigate and do. So I've seen a lot of bathroom fans, a lot of bathroom ventilations, a lot of roof leaks, a lot of issues with water stains on the ceilings and walls and different things. And I've had, this has happened a few times, but the one I remember the most was all the work that they had done, because they had a water spot that kept reoccurring in their master bathroom, and it was happening right at the edge of the exterior wall, right at the top of the ceiling, right at that wall, and it just kept reoccurring. And they had several people try and look at it, several people come out and try and figure out what's going on. And the list of things that they had done was, they started with the roof, and a roofer said, well, it's probably ice damming, because ice damming definitely can occur in our area pretty easily with a lot of our harsh kind of winters, and then melting and warming up and getting cold again. So they had the bottom 3 feet of the roof stripped off in that area. They put on ice and water shield, did all this protections, put the roof back, said, oh, perfect, great, then we did it. 12 months later, water stains back after they patched paint, did everything. Water stains right back. Like, oh, it's not the roof. So they have a siding company come out, and they took off the soffit and all of the soffiting underneath that area, and they kind of addressed it from the outside and said, make sure the ventilation's working, make sure that things are happening. So they kind of opened that up, did some things, put it all back together. 12 months later, water stains back. So then the siding company says, it's probably the gutters, and they're overflowing, and it's following the soffit back, and it's getting to the edge of the wall and the roof. So they did new gutters and repitched the gutters and got a brand new gutter across the back of the house. Guess what? 12 months later, water stains back. I arrive at their house, and he's telling me all these, he's done 3 projects to stop this leak and has never stopped the leak. And I said, well, has anybody gone up in the attic? No one's ever looked in the attic. I'm like, well, would you mind if I looked in your attic? Like, where's the attic access? How do I get? I get up in the attic, and basically where this water stain is, it's a vaulted ceiling coming down from the towards the middle of the house down to the edge of the wall, and you go directly up that area, there's a bath fan right there. And of course I saw that from underneath and was like, well, in line with this water stain is your bath fan 15 feet away up the roof, but there's your bath fan. So I go up in the attic and they got a flexible pipe running straight down that vault on the backside of the insulation and the drywall. And it ends right there at the soffit. And I'm like, yep. So every time you're losing heat from the house, you're running that bath fan, every winter you do that, that pipe's condensating, and right at the edge of that pipe is where that water stain is. Condensation is forming, it's running out of that pipe, and it's dumping right there, and that stain keeps coming back. And we did that bathroom ventilation fix that I was talking about earlier with the insulation and through the roof and the backdraft damper, and now that stain is gone, and that stain is gone for good. It took 4 projects, but actually only one of them was the correct project to solve the issue. So this person spent a lot of money to get to that final project when if they would have got to me in the beginning before all that stuff happens, we could have just done the one project like we were talking about with Rose on they did this for us, they did a great job, and been through it and not had to look back at all these other projects. So there's a lot to be said for looking, investigating. Has somebody actually been somewhere? Have they, how far are they just using theories and saying this is probably what's happening? Because those were all good theories, but until you really knew more and investigated more, you could have avoided the first three. And another common issue that I run into all the time, way too often, is actually just that it's not always one thing, or it's not always one leak, or it's not always like I've got 3 leaks and I just got an old roof, and if I get a new roof, I'm going to fix all 3 leaks. And it turns out that the new roof actually didn't end up being any of the leaks, even though it's still an old roof, and the recommendation would still 100% be replace your roof. It's so old that if something happens, you're going to get a major leak from it, and you're better off nipping that in the bud a lot sooner and getting that taken care of so that you don't have shingles blow off and a rainstorm and catastrophic stuff happen. But you look at a house that needs a new roof and you see 3 different leaks on the ceiling in different areas. And I actually go up into the attic and I start investigating where these leaks might be coming from. And one of them is actually a broken plumbing vent pipe that got filled with water, froze in the winter, and split the PVC pipe. So one of the leaks is a plumbing issue in the attic with the pipe not running downhill the right way, and it was collecting water. And the other was around a skylight, like a sonotube round skylight that puts that metal pipe through the attic. And it's just condensation. That pipe had watermarks all over it. So it wasn't leaking where they installed the top of the sonotube on the shingles. It was condensating and just getting all around the bathroom ceiling. But you've got this metal pipe running through an attic, and it's in a bathroom, so there's always warm, moist air, showers, all that happening. And so that's condensating. So 2 of the 3 leaks had absolutely nothing to do with getting new shingles. So you get new roof, new shingles, and 2 of your leaks come back, and you find out it's different things later if you don't investigate deep enough into this entire project and really find out what's going on. So having someone like our people here at Mosby to understand more of the entire situation and to know and be trained a little more to look a little deeper into it. It's easy to see that and go, yep, you need a new roof, we'll do that, you should be good. And in the end, you might not be so good because you didn't find everything. So that happens way too often. all the time, and I love telling stories, and I've got hundreds of them, so I can get into even more, but I'd love to get into some conversations, some questions that you may have, some issues going on around your house. We can make this as specific as we need to what you have going on. Feel free to give me a call, 314-436-7900. We'll get you straight in here to me. Phone lines are wide open. We're going to take a short break. Don't touch that dial. All right, here we go, everybody. We got some calls coming in, so let's jump straight to Mildred and see what's going on. Are you there, Mildred?
Yes, I had called earlier pertaining to the roof, but I had another question because you brought up other things. What if the instead of going up on the roof, I was told a lot of the contractors and all, they send a drone up to get a scenario as to what need to be done. And that so do that drone show small soft spots like walking the roof would, you know, whether or not if there's going to be a lumber problem, you know, the lumber might be, rotted out or whatever. And especially around, like you say, the vents and different things that are on a roof. How can you tell whether or not, because I had a leak in the bathroom, and that's, that's asking the question, how can a drone pick up that comparably to a man's knowledge that would go up there to see what is the best route?
So definitely getting on the roof, feeling the roof, walking on the roof, putting your weight on the roof, getting to touch and feel areas is always better than the drone. Sometimes it's just a really hard, tough, super steep. Maybe there's other concerns that make it hard to get access to the roof. And so I use a drone. I have a drone. I'll do that at times to see things. I've actually got a house I'm going to go by there this coming week and try and look at the backside of a chimney that I can't see from the ground with a drone. But yes, photos can be a little bit deceiving. So you can see issues. You can see how much the roof is wearing, but you will not be able to feel how soft the plywood is. Are there soft spots? And get a real feel for how much work you think you may get into. But most of them, most of those companies, they just cover that by saying, well, you know, and we do the same thing because you can't really tell how much. So they just put it, this is how much it costs per sheet. And if we get into needing to replace it while we're doing the roof, this is what we're going to charge you for every single sheet that we replace. But if you get up there, yes, you might be able to warn people like, your roof is really soft. I feel like we're going to have a lot of sheets to replace just to prepare you, and the drone will not do that.
And when you say sheets, are you talking about
the plywood?
The plywood, okay.
Yep, the plywood underneath the roof is, okay. It's hard to know how bad it is. Even walking the roof, it's hard to know for sure how much, but a good roofer can get a feel walking the roof for yours seems pretty soft. I feel like we're going to have a lot of work to do underneath.
Basically, do they add that in? If they do, if the only thing they do is a drone, especially like you say, around the chimney where tuck pointing might be needed or something like that, or a water leak, will a drone pull that out? Or is this an extra expense that will come up on you after you get a bid and all?
Yeah. Most of them, they'll give you the quote or the bid to replace the roof, and here's how much the roof work cost. And then there will be a line in there that says, once we strip the roof, if we need to replace some of your plywood sheeting, we are going to charge you X amount of dollars per plywood sheet to replace each sheet. And some houses, you need 1, 2, 3 sheets replaced. Some you need none. Some you get into it and they need to recover the entire roof because all of the plywood is so bad and delaminated that they get into a really big plywood project and you don't find that out until they're stripping the shingles. And it's and that's a very common way to do it. That's the way everybody's going to do it. The only thing that they could do is if they do walk the roof, they can kind of let you know, I'm going to plan for this much because I know we're going to have some, or your roof feels really sturdy. I don't think we're going to need a lot. So they can kind of give you a heads up if they walk the roof. If you use a drone, you can't really give someone a heads up on that plywood.
How long normally do plywood last underneath a roofing? Say you have a 20-year-old roof. On shingles on the roof. And is there a difference now in the shingles? Has there been any changes like architecture or whatever?
Uh-huh.
You know, I see advertisement of different things, but what is the normal flow to go to replace shingles? And how long do that plywood normally last, and are we talking about drip, how you say it, the drips, drip edges?
Oh, yeah, the drip edge, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's all I'm trying to get. It's been over 20 years since I've had a roof done, so I know that the roof, you know.
Yeah, and if your roof is ventilated, if the ventilation's working decently, and you're not getting a lot of moisture and overheating and condensation and things happening from the underside of the roof, the plywood sheeting on a roof will last for years and years and years, way beyond the life of one roof that might be 20 or 30 years. So, I mean, we have houses from the 50s that still have the same plywood underneath them. So it's really a matter of how well has it worked? Have you had many leaks? Are there damaged areas? And if you're ventilating well or not ventilating well, that can delaminate that plywood. So really, there's so much circumstance, but mostly the plywood sheeting underneath the roof lasts for a lot of years, lasts for 2 or 3 roofs. So you're talking 40, 60 years, something like that, that plywood under the right conditions can actually last. And the roofing
and
shingles themselves will last longer now.
To roofing.
Uh-huh.
They now just take off everything. You know, I got only one layer of roofing. Where it used to, you could put another layer
yep.
over the other shingles. They don't do that anymore, do they?
No, not many people. I mean, you can do that, but 99.9% of roofing companies out there don't even offer that anymore. Basically because when you put a shingle on top of a shingle, it just takes the life expectancy of that new shingle and cuts it in half. So if you have a shingle that should last 30 years, it's probably only going to last 15, maybe 20 if you're lucky. And it could have lasted 30 or 35 or 40 if you did the whole roof. So definitely worth doing the whole roof, and not many people are doing recovers whatsoever anymore because of the expectancy of that life. So, hey, we've got a couple other callers on the line. Mildred, I got to run. If we're going to jump into a short break, and then as soon as we return, I promise we'll get to Susie, we'll get to Joe right after we return. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, we are back as promised. Let's go straight to the phones, see what's going on with Susie. Susie, are you there?
Yes, sir. I have a question regarding our shower.
Okay.
Our house is about 16 years old, and it now when you turn off the shower, it just keeps dripping and dripping and dripping. And in order to get it to stop, you have to go backwards and turn it on a little bit. And our house has very high calcium lime rust type of water in it.
Uh-huh.
So I took off the shower head and soaked that in some lime away and cleaned that off. And I'm wondering if I need to do something like that to the handle, or is it something else that would be doing that to where you know, you have to kind of go backwards in order for it to stop dripping. And then even then you have to wait a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. That is common because, and it's basically like the cartridge that's inside that shower valve. That so as you're turning that handle, you're kind of starting off on cold and going, you know, starting off a hot and going through to cold. And so basically as you turn it, it kind of comes open to the valve. So what's happened is you probably got some calcium inside there all around that cartridge. It's got rubber ring washers and fittings and stuff that kind of stop that water. So when you come across and you shut it off, if you go too far, you're going back towards open on the cold side slightly. And so by moving it back, you're actually stopping it in the more true off position. But you probably also have some calcium around the cartridge and the rubber's probably wearing. So what I would recommend is figuring out what the handle is, like who manufactures it, find out what that handle and valve is. And what you do is you order a new cartridge, and you can buy these cartridges for a lot of common shower valves at the big box stores like Lowe's or Home Depot, Menards or whatever. So you could take the cartridge out and go there and try and find a replica and then replace it and put the new one in. And you can kind of clean that out inside that valve and around that new cartridge before you put it in to get any calcium out of there. And if there's that much calcium happening all the time, you might also then want to consider a water softener, because that'll help prevent that from happening as much.
What's a good brand for that kind of a water softener for the house?
I've done a ton of work, and I've had a lot of clients that have gotten Aqua Systems water softeners, and they are really good. And one of the things that I really like about them for their water softeners is it's their stuff, it's their equipment, and they also service it. So it's not like you just buy something and then there's really no one there to help service it. So they can actually put it in, set it up, and they can deliver the salt. They can put the salt in if you like. They can do everything to service that unit, kind of like your furnace. You have your guy show up every year. He makes sure that it's fine. He makes sure everything's okay with it. They can provide the same type of service for that water softener. So it's really nice system with them and their people and how they handle from the purchase all the way through the life of that water softener.
Okay, I appreciate that. Now, only other question I have is the cartridge that you get, is it a lower quality if you get it at the Home Depot and some of those instead of like a plumbing place?
So that, that it really won't be, because it will be the same that you have. So it's probably a builder grade, and it would be the cheaper version, but to get a better one, you'd need a whole new shower valve.
I see. Ours is like a Delta.
Yep.
It's a Delta brand, and we got it through my husband's a carpenter, so we got it through like a company, you know, like a higher grade.
Yeah. You went to a plumbing supply house.
Right.
Yeah. So, and I would go right back to that same place to get that cartridge, because they'll make sure you get the right one.
I appreciate it.
All right.
Appreciate your help. Thank
you. Yeah, perfect. You're very welcome. Great question. And let's jump on the line here with Joe, see what's going on. We got about 3 minutes left here. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, I have a question on gas struts for a trapdoor, basement trapdoor.
Uh-huh.
And so in trying to figure out, I think I was given some bad advice, but I talked to one guy who said, oh, you need to get the strongest ones you can get because they'll last longer. So I ordered a pair of 150-pound gas struts. I think it's 150 per strut. But anyway, not knowing – And then I tried to mount them on the trap door is only 30 inches wide, 70 inches long, and it's a piece of 3/4 inch plywood.
Uh-huh.
So it's maybe 50 to 60 pounds. It'll have flooring on top of it, so it'll max out at about 100. But there's no real, is there anywhere I can go to find a real clear indication of how to mount those struts? Because when you look online, there's like a bazillion different ways of mounting those, and no one really seems to explain it very well.
Wow. Yeah, I truly do not know anywhere to go to figure that out and to understand the best way to mount those. I do mm-hmm. know that, yeah, you can get them to where if they're holding too much weight, it's really not even going to possibly let the door want to shut.
Correct.
You're like pushing down on it to try and get it to shut.
Correct.
Because you want to
shut.
Yeah, right. You want to make sure you've got a close to an accurate weight
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
that door with the size that you buy. But as far as the best way to mount them or finding information on the best way to mount them, it would be the instructions from the manufacturer is what I would be looking for.
Right. Well,
with
that's
them, and
China.
Here's what I got. How do you,
right, and they, you know, they can't
barely
even
read it.
Use the proper grammar to even explain it right, and you're like, "What are you saying?" And it's way more challenging than I ever thought it would be. And
So I wish I could help you out more and had a better place to go, but yeah, those Chinese instructions with just photos and you can't really understand them don't always help us all out all the time. So, yep. All right, Joe. All right, I guess we lost Joe there, I think. I wish you luck trying to get those put in a good manner and everything. And I know if without good, proper instructions, it can be very, very hard to get something put in the right manner. And trying to follow that can be definitely difficult. I've always recommended, you know, jump back to the actual manufacturer's type specs, instructions, and what they're trying to say. So it is a shame that anymore so many things come from overseas, from other countries, that it can be extremely difficult to follow their instructions and completely understand them. But hey, we're completely out of time. Had some great calls, some great conversations. I appreciate everyone calling in and getting some advice today. And I remind everybody, be good to each other, be good to your homes. I'll talk to everybody next week.